we are somewhere in the middle. I know my page numbers are a little bit off. So we're right about where, I believe it's case study number 2 with Chris and Jennifer. So it's always fun. We'll start with a case study. We'll talk about them and try to get some just discussion going. What page is that on for you guys? It's 4 for me.
Page 4.
All right, right there. Oh, Chris and Jennifer, they both agree that they should live within their means, spend less than they are making. Jennifer meticulously records every single expense on a spreadsheet with monthly amounts budgeted for different categories. Chris says he always checks the account balance before making any large purchase. Sometimes he forgets to give Jennifer all of his receipts, and this sometimes makes it difficult for Jennifer to keep them within their budget. Right? What would you say if Jennifer came to you for some advice? She's kind of having difficulties managing the budget because Chris doesn't always keep her all up to date.
Maybe ask her when he's making these purchases and for what things. Is there a pattern? So if he's going to Walmart, then, I mean, it's not the easiest thing in the world, but maybe she could go with him, and that helps solve the issue.
Okay.
It's probably not going to be that easy, or maybe it's 2 in the morning when he's on his laptop and he's just scrolling through Amazon. Impulsive buyer.
Okay. So you'd ask her questions to help kind of ascertain if she sees any patterns as to what's going on.
I would ask how he's paying, like if he's paying with a credit card. A lot of times you get the transaction.
Yeah, she can find it without.
Transaction or if he is going to Walmart, hey, type in my phone number, I get the receipt. I mean, there's a lot of ways to make sure you get the receipt unless
Where,
he's paying
yeah.
with cash. And do you know about that?
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, that's one thing with modern payment. There's fewer and fewer cash transactions, so it can be easier to track and find other ways, especially if you have debit cards or credit card.
Although I've seen this a lot of times that like people will come into Browns and then be like, I want to pay with this with cash so that my husband or wife doesn't know.
No.
He was like, let me help you.
We have a special cash register just for this purpose.
For gifts.
That's right. It is extremely hard to get gifts and surprise someone if you share everything transparently. Yeah, that's right. Don't look at your email. Wait a second. Let me delete your email, the confirmation email, and then the shipping email, and then the yes.
You know, and if he forgets to give her the seat and then it's been a few weeks to a month ago, do they need to maybe have, if they don't have that, or if they do have that, that's maybe not often enough, you know, maybe a couple weeks, you know, because it's easier to forget with more time what you spend the money.
Yeah, that's very much. Any tips you could give Chris on things he could do? Should he be doing anything differently to help?
Does he have access to the budget and understand it?
Okay, yeah, how on board is he? It says that he always checks the account balance, right? There's money in our bank, right?
Yes,
it's there. We can spend it. Well, that's budgeted, Chris. Well, it's there, right?
Is it a healthy budget?
So what do you mean by?
Maybe does Jennifer have too unrealistic?
Tightly controlled?
Yeah, tightly controlled stuff.
Okay.
What's a large purchase?
Yes. Well, and maybe it says he checks it when a large purchase. So if it's anything under $200, he just doesn't check. You know, like a lot of those purchases might add up, right? So being maybe more mindful, those are good things. And it says makes it very difficult for Jennifer to keep them within their budget. You know, Chris could always make more money. It's easier to stay within your budget, possibly, but.
Yeah, I think Catherine kind of mentioned this. Isn't there like an integrated like credit card app thing? Where
yeah, like if I pay with my credit card, it automatically comes over to my phone and I can like see everything that
think there's like some sort of app that categorize, like if you just commit to one credit card and that's what you use for all purchases.
Called Every Dollar.
Every dollar.
Okay.
With a premium though. Not
yeah, I mean, you have to pay for it.
That's
but then it can connect to your bank account.
Yeah.
So then any card connected to your bank account, it puts that transaction in the budget.
This message has been brought to you by Ramsey Solutions.
Is that Dave Ramsey?
Dave, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it's credit card. It's just the credit card itself. You can organize it to.
Yeah.
All that.
And so I think one thing we're hitting on is that there's kind of two dimensions that we're at least hitting on is that there's the stewardship that Chris and Jennifer are trying to be good stewards of what God has given them, but also a lot of the issues is that kind of the communication / oneness between the husband and wife. So when you think about budget, there's the issue of, you know, are they communicating on the budget, and also are they one about the budget? Are they both
yeah.
committed to the budget? And so in this case, it could be that they're attempting to be good stewards, but maybe they're not 100% together on the plan, right? That's often the number one when you hear a husband or wife call in to the show and they're like, what's your wife think? What's your husband? Well, they're not really on board. How did I know? This could be an issue.
There's a YouTube channel. I think it's an accountant who goes through like people who have lots of credit card debt, and he goes through this with them. And this lady purchased, I think it was $6,000 worth of Labubus, which seemed to be some sort of new like stuffed toy fad.
Okay.
And I mean it's silly, but also like there's a trend which is if you're spending money and you're actively hiding it, it's probably usually an indication of that there's something ultimately wrong with your heart.
Yeah.
And that's going to lead to there's something wrong with the marriage.
Yeah. And I think that kind of fits in. We've talked about some of the wisdom from the Proverbs that do this, don't do this. So, like, don't get rich quick, right? Do work hard. So that would fall into our, you know, don't hide or be deceptive or keep things from your spouse when it comes to your finances. It'd be a good principle. Let's look at Matt and Ashley. Okay, we're going to do one more here. See some discussion. Matt and Ashley believe in working hard for a living. Both of them have full-time jobs. Both their kids are in high school, and they both have part-time jobs. Matt and Ashley manage their own separate accounts. They split all the bills 50-50, including giving to the church. Apart from paying the bills, Matt and Ashley talk a little about money, and they trust each other's judgment. So pros and cons, right? What are the pros and the cons here? There might be some discussion here, because I know we have people that are kind of like, I like it, I don't like it situation, right? So what would you say are some pros or cons of the way things work for them?
Yeah, it gives them each a sense of independence, which I guess could be bad, but sounds good to me.
So I'll put it in the middle.
My wife and I have separate
right? Is that a pro or a con? There's a sense of independence where they're each responsible for.
Yeah. We had separate accounts and it worked great.
Well, I'm sure why. That's really organized, isn't it?
We had separate accounts when we got married. We just kept going that way.
Mm-hmm.
It worked pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, they trust each other's judgment.
Okay.
It seems like the relationship is healthy and they trust each other.
Yeah. So. It helps if you both tie a tight ones.
Are you both?
I am.
Kind of. It's unusual. It's more common that you have more of a spending personality and one's more of a saver.
She splurges some places, I splurge some places. Mm-hmm. So kind of evens out.
Yeah.
You don't complain, I don't complain.
Yeah.
I'm talking too much too.
I think if one person's like an independent contractor or has their own business.
Mm-hmm.
For tax reasons, organization.
Keep things
it's
separate.
Just easier to keep things separate, but that's more of a business account.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, it could be
something like that.
You know, is there, when it says they both have full-time jobs, right, is this a business account that they're operating?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder if they view it as my money, you can't touch it.
Okay.
Or if it's more of
yeah.
a...
Was that a pro or a con?
That'd be a con.
Okay.
I mean, it, like, in a marriage, you know, being unified, you know, assets together, they're one. So do they recognize that, and it's just a functional thing, or is it a,
yeah,
like, holding on to mine?
Yeah, very much.
We each have our fund money account.
Fund money.
Yeah.
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 Slush fund.
You know, that
mm-hmm.
works real
good.
Yeah. I think a positive, the 50-50 split idea, the positive part of that is that it's not 40-60 or 70-30. They're taking equal responsibility
mm-hmm.
to whole. So they're not like saying, well, you make more and I make less, so I just pay less.
Mm-hmm.
It seems a sense that they're both fully in.
Mm-hmm.
Why the negative is, the positive, they trust each other, which is a high positive. But I think that the negative is, they don't have a protective measure of having each other on each other's accounts. So for example, even if they had them on two accounts that were split, he could be added to her account, and she could be added to his account, have full access, and really give greater transparency
mm-hmm.
that prevent problems in the future.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, are these, the question is kind of like, are they completely separate? Are they, which would be over on this side? Right? If they're completely separate, that would be more of a con because there's no accountability. If there were perhaps joint accounts where there's complete transparency to where one manages out of one manages out of the other.
Yeah.
What else?
I think there could also be a lack of shared purpose because they're not making plans together, so they can't be moving towards something together clearly.
And where your money goes, so goes your heart. Jesus.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, let's elaborate on that. So where your money goes, right, where your treasure is, there your heart is. You see, that was your quotation.
Uh-huh.
So where your treasure is, that points to where your heart is. So how does that relate to kind of the way they have things set up?
Whose money is in charge of buying the groceries?
Mm-hmm.
Whose money is in charge of buying the kids soccer cleats because you enrolled them in a soccer camp and soccer camps are really expensive and they don't provide gear and it's more expensive?
Mm-hmm.
Who does each of that? And then mm-hmm. what if you both buy food?
Yeah.
What if you both buy food for the week, but you each bought a lot of food?
Yeah.
And the food is going to go bad.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
So if you don't talk a lot about money, that
mm-hmm.
sounds great until you realize that money kind of runs how a system operates, and that if you're not talking about it and you're not talking about what each of, if you're going to have a 50-50 split, you need to at least talk about who does what.
Yeah, I would say that this is sometimes listed as one of the biggest pros and cons of this situation. So a lot of times people will appeal because they don't need to talk about money because they're managing their own part, their own half. Mm-hmm. I don't have to ask if I want to spend money on this because that's out of my account and I know what I'm responsible for. So there are some that can be a big advantage, but kind of as you're pointing out, there can be in both the practical sense but also in the shared vision, shared purpose, there can be a sense in which not having to talk about money can be a big negative, where you're not really a one unit, it's kind of two separate individuals, and are those individuals kind of aligned in their purpose?
Yeah, another difficulty would be if one person makes way more money than the other. So
you come home and I just bought another new truck.
50-50 is now 60-40, or yeah, so that you can get into some equity, or let's say it's a husband and wife, and the wife is more inclined to spend her money on the kids because she just feels a greater sense of ownership towards it, which would allow the husband to keep more for his.
Yeah, there's kind of like there can be a big power imbalance.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you got your money to spend on your things, and
You bought, it's, I mean, you wanted to buy the kids clothing.
Yeah. I just bought this F-150, you know.
And if one of them runs out of money, is the other going to help? Because
mm-hmm.
if you're not,
yeah.
then what, I mean, kind of what's the point of you being married?
Mm. Yeah, you guys have jumped all the way to my question. Do you foresee any potential points of conflict? So we talked about how if there's an imbalance, big difference between incomes, or if there's a difference in kind of vision or purpose as to what are we doing with our resources. Are there any other things you foresee that could be difficulties, conflicts?
I think it would just drive a divide. Like, if we're called to be one
mm-hmm.
in marriage, I think spiritually, but also that is played out in
mm-hmm.
our day-to-day lives. And so having that unity financially,
mm-hmm.
I think it just gives a foothold for division.
Like yeah.
you said earlier, like, this is my money, this is your money. There's already that, like, divided language instead of, like, our money, our
mm-hmm.
household together.
Yeah, and I'll kind of lay my cards out. Like, I would always want and counsel people to have one account and that you both draw that account. That's just my personal belief, my kind of view on that. And it comes rooted from that main idea is that in it, as much as possible, you want to view your marriage as you are one. You're one flesh. You're one household. You, everything that I have is yours and everything. There's no mine and yours. It's ours. Now, when it comes to practicality, there may be situations where people can have that oneness and make it work with two different accounts. So it's not like a hard and fast rule. But that would be my perspective that I would be coming from. And if I was advising someone, that's probably what I would say in that situation.
You feel trapped, too. You know, one person has more in their account than the other and doesn't have the same ability or freedom. I mean, with more money comes more freedoms. That's just that's the fact of the way the world works. And
mm-hmm.
so just because of that, there's just, if one person makes more than the other, doesn't have access to as much money or all the money,
mm-hmm.
the unity's not there and the freedoms aren't as abounding, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It would feel like more, okay, I'm stuck in this and this is my allotted allowance each month or whatever it is. Whereas if you're in one account or joint accounts, you're all in it together. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and it does create, it will create, especially at the beginning, and the more you seek oneness through your marriage, it can be more difficult if you have a difference of the more different you are in your spending habits, the more different you are in like what you enjoy spending money on, and especially if you have a difference in your vision and your priority for your finances. It can be very challenging to try and live out of that one account as everything's ours if I really want to spend this money on the kids and their education, and I want to spend it on retirement, or I'm going to spend it on the house, all the good things. And so it's not that it's going to be always easier in that sense, but working to be kind of a couple where you're one is going to be a big, big part of that. And whatever that looks like, whether it's one account or two accounts, that's kind of your goal.
Also, you make more money with 10K in the bank than you do with 5K in two separate bank accounts. Not passive income.
Okay. Thank you very much, Warren. Let's go to page. What page are we on now? I don't know. 5-ish. Give to the Lord. Okay. Proverbs 14:31. We have a couple verses here. Proverbs 14:31. Whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him. And 1 Timothy 5:18, let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain, and the laborer deserves his wages. So this is kind of one of our last principles from scripture, is that we want to be generous people who give to the Lord, give to the church, give to the work of, give to the needy. So I think the first question is, what does that say about us to the world around us and to the church and to the unbelievers? What does it say about our character if we're generous? What kind of people are generous?
People who love others.
Yeah, shows that you have a love and a concern for others. Anything else?
You're happy.
You're happy? Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen a happy person who always wants to withhold their money. But all the generous people are super happy.
Mm-hmm. or someone who doesn't want to give anything away but super happy. Mm-hmm. That's a good observation.
It shows that you trust God because you're willing to give your money.
Yeah. Yeah, and it, notice that it doesn't say here the financial state or condition of the person that's being generous, whether they're wealthy or whether they're even in poverty, right? And generosity can come from any situation.
Seems like they really get the steward mentality because it's not theirs and they don't hold it tight. So like really generous people don't see like, okay, this is how much money I have and I can give up this much money of my money.
Yeah.
It's okay, this is what I've been entrusted with and this is how
yeah.
I can bless somebody because God's given it to me.
They're seeing themselves as someone who's there to manage God's resources, right, to
yep.
other people, to pass it through them. It's not meant to just end with me.
Yep.
That's good. That's good. Why do you think God feels insulted? Like, let's go to James. Okay. James 1. When the poor man is oppressed.
Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world.
So, yeah, yeah, so caring for orphans and widows, right? So how does God feel when we are not generous? Why is he insulted in that way?
I mean, imagine you give your kid 2 cookies, and then your child proceeds to scream at their sibling when their sibling asks for 1/2 a cookie.
Yeah.
It's just a little silly.
Or you give them 1,000,000 jelly beans, and they can't give 1 jelly bean. Their siblings maybe a little, right? It's a lot of jelly beans. It is. I was looking up, you guys know the parable of the unmerciful servant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was doing a little bit of research on the units of money. And so like the servant owed the 10,000 talents. So if that was talents of gold, that'd be around 20 billion. No, yeah, 20 billion that he owed. And then the debt that the other person owed him was like in thousands, like maybe it was less than 1,000,000. I'm trying to remember.
Like 10,000 or something.
10,000, something like that. So it was significant, but not in comparison to what that person had been given. So it kind of speaks to that idea of generosity that it's hard to hold back when you realize what you've been given. So we have giving to the church. What are some other ways that we can be generous as good stewards of God's resources? Where can we give?
Giving to missionaries is the best.
It's the best. It's the best. If you guys, and if you don't know who to give to, we can hook you up with somebody. That's right. That's right. That's one of the key ways that we can support the missions work is by giving. Yeah.
Well, one of the ways we've seen people give past few months is we've been having meals brought to our house twice a week during the cancer treatments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that takes time and effort and money. And it's a way to give to people in need.
Yeah. Sometimes we don't think about it. I think the normal way we think about it is, right, we think about, okay, we're going to give money to the church. And then we can think we can give money to other places, right? So missionaries, yes, right? Money here, money there. But there's also, right, you can be generous with, you know, food, meals,
hospitality,
right? And so you can think about what's a way that I can bless someone who
really could use some help in some way. So that's kind of being a good steward. And sometimes it isn't specifically just giving money, but it's you're more involved where you actually serve with your time, and it may cost you something, but it's more than just giving of your resources. So I think that's something when you think about finances and marriage, and kind of maybe hooking it back to this, it'd be good to talk about, if you're married, where do we want to be generous? Right? What is there? And generally, some of the best places to be generous is, what is it that you have a heart for? What part of God's work do you have a real heart for? Because it will tie you to that ministry. You've talked about how when your dad started giving,
yep,
right? He started to care a lot more about what was being taught at church, right? So if you have ministries that you know, people that you know, right? If you know where there's work of God going on, that's a great place to invest and be generous, because it helps you feel committed, to feel like you're contributing in that sense. So be thinking about what are the areas. So any other areas you can think of? We got missionaries. We got hospitality. How else can we get? Yes? Mm-hmm. Children are a big one, right? And especially in areas where they have less resources, all kinds of things. That'd be awesome.
Not monetarily, but like your spiritual gifts. Like you can be generous in providing your skills that the Lord has blessed you with to somebody who isn't. So I'm organizationally minded. I'd love to organize somebody's pantry, something or other. Happy to do it.
Yeah. And in reality, some people may not realize this, but if you're a able-bodied adult, when you give of your service, you are kind of giving financially, because you're sacrificing that time, which you could be using to work. So some people are robbing the church, and they're robbing really of their service by working so much that they don't allow any time to serve in one way or the other, to use their spiritual gifts at all. So that's another issue to consider is my job, and am I working to earn so much money that I can't serve my family, I can't serve my church, I can't be involved in that way. So using your service is going to require you to make sure you're not working every single hour. Which can be a challenge. Sometimes that's the wisdom that people will say, is just work every hour that you have available.
Whatever skill sets you have, make them available to others around you, particularly to the church body, those in need. So I think of, the Brazzles are like medical.
That's right.
And auto.
Right. One stop.
For all, most of us at some point, in some way, and they do it out of generosity.
Yeah.
But whatever your skill sets are, those are things that can be made available to others. For some, it's being young and strong, and you can help.
Yeah, move stuff.
Know? Those years have passed me, I think. But, against my shoulder.
Just supervise. He goes over there.
Each of us have those things, though. So thinking of those in terms of being, God's given us those skills and abilities in some way to be generous, to serve and bless others, including the church body. So we see that with elders and deacons as well. They're using their skills and their gifts and their abilities in a variety of ways to serve the body.
Yeah, very much so. So when you guys think about giving, how you can give, I would say two things. And we'll get to, I think this is a key question that'll help you bring this out. But you can always give something, right, financially. But you've always got other things that you can give as well. You can got your gifts and your abilities and your talents. But what about that question? How much money should you give? Any words of wisdom? You can cheat and you can look at, right, 2 Corinthians if you know. Right, but how much should you give? Is there an amount that you're required to give? Do you have freedom there? What do you guys think? What's a good rule of thumb?
I always thought the best quote was, I think it was Charles Wesley, I'm not sure. He said, make all you can, save all you can, and give all you can.
All you can, yeah.
And I just always thought that was real good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make your life a priority of your earning income, saving income, right?
You're going to retire someday.
Okay, and? Giving. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you really have to save up for retirement, as we're learning now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess, in a way, how happy you want to be.
Yeah?
I mean, Paul says, I want you to give, not for my good, but for your good. He's mm-hmm. like, I don't need, I've learned to be poor. Like, mm-hmm. that's the passage where he says, I can do all things through Christ. Mm-hmm. I've learned how to be poor.
Yeah.
I know how to be abundant. Like, that's, mm-hmm. it's, but I'm encouraging you guys to give because it's for your good, both on this earth and in the world to come.
Yeah. So there's kind of a, it's almost, you can look at it as almost like a selfish thing. Like this is a, it's reverse. Like it's really for your good. The more generous you can be,
mm-hmm.
it releases you and it helps you, gives you greater joy.
Yeah. Eternal investments.
Eternal investments. Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
Sending it on ahead.
Exactly.
That's great. Any other? Yeah.
I think more like practical. I think generosity, you can't be generous if you don't feel it. So one measure is it should hurt a little bit if you're going to be generous.
Yeah.
If you're giving out of your abundance and you never feel it, then you're probably not being very generous.
Mm-hmm.
And then a practical for Naomi and I, so I don't believe that the tithe is a command, but I think it's a principle.
Mm-hmm.
But the command is generosity, so it's hard to believe you could be generous and give less than that.
Yeah.
So for we would counsel people that at a baseline to give 10% of what they earn to the Lord, and we would say give that to the local church, and then strive to give on top of that in other ways. And then as a family, you can actually aim for even a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
You can maybe start at 11 or
mm-hmm.
12, maybe even 20 or 30.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can aim for that, then that you begin to actually use your money in a way that is intentionally investing towards things. So for
mm-hmm.
us, 10% would be to the local church, and then above that, there's freedom to give to missionaries and different things or meet pressing needs.
Mm-hmm.
But it's done not haphazardly, intentionally, in a way that you actually feel it.
Yeah. And so we do, I think you brought up a good point that, you know, the tithe is kind of an old, right, which means 10, is kind of a principle that gets brought out. And a lot of times it's like a suggestion in the New Testament as, this is a great starting place. And I think there's a real good discussion as well that as you earn more and more and more, the amount that you really need to live on is kind of flat. It's not that you need, I made more money, now I need more food to live. And so you have the ability, and oftentimes it's good to aim for, can I give a greater amount? Even though 10% is going to be a greater dollar amount as you make more money. So that's the amount is not really set out in the New Testament. And so let's just read through this passage in 2 Corinthians to kind of mention some of what Paul wrote. So he's talking to the church about how they gave the collection for the Christians in Jerusalem. And he's discussing their giving. And so he says, the point is this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he's decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion. For God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work. As it's written, he has distributed freely, and he has given to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. And he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. And he continues to go on talking about, you'll be enriched in every way, to be generous in every way, which through us will produce thanksgiving to God. So he talks about so much is happening through their giving. He says the ministry of the service is not only supplying the needs of the saints, but is also overflowing in many thanksgivings to God. And so he talks about how when you give, you're not just supplying their needs. You're actually causing people to give thanks to God and people to glorify God through their witnessing our generosity. And so there is that selfish aspect of the being. He's like, look, if you want to reap, you know, sparingly, then sow sparingly. But if you want to reap bountifully, then you should sow bountifully. Questions? Let's pause for questions. Any questions? You guys are all thinking about what to give.
Yeah, I think it's interesting in that passage about how the Lord will provide seed for the sower. Let's see where it is.
Yeah.
Verse 10, he who mm-hmm. supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of righteousness. And I don't want to get all like prosperity.
Right. Right.
But it is interesting how when people are generous with what the Lord gives them, the Lord often gives them more to be generous with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when people are miserly with what the Lord gives them, it's like, why would the Lord bless you?
Mm-hmm.
So they can hoard. That wouldn't be.
Right.
But,
yeah.
And again, you know, prosperity theology is like cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a sense where.
Yeah.
I've just known many people who, once they really started giving, like their business took off or
mm-hmm.
something like that went off because they said, okay, well, honor the Lord with this first.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of a blend of, there's a little bit of mystery to it because God has so many other purposes behind
yeah.
how he uses resources. But again, in the purely sense of him accomplishing fruitful ministry and the use of the resources,
yeah.
If he has someone and people that are faithfully distributing the money as he sees fit, then it makes sense for him to
mm-hmm.
you know, allocate more resources as they continue to use that more faithfully. So that's a good point. So it's a good question. If you get a raise, if you get a better job, right? Okay, how does God want me to allocate this increase in resources?
Yeah, and I'd say to all the college students, start giving now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just make a part of just how you worship and see it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of, I'll make a lot of money now and give a lot later.
Right. Like, I'll keep my heart now for myself and I'll give my heart to God later.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too is, I know a lot of times people wait till they're dead to give.
Uh-huh.
I'll give when I'm dead. Well, that's not giving. That's like the Lord just took it away from you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not giving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the expression, do your giving while you're living.
Right.
So you're knowing where it's going. I know, it's very deep. Very deep.
Did Dave Ramsey say that?
I don't know, but it was more in the sense of like your will and your estate, because really no one can reach back from the grave. So if you really want your money to go somewhere, don't wait till your will to disperse it, because it can always be contested and no one has control over anything once they're dead. So if you want to give your resources to some place or to your kids or to wherever you want to go, do it before you die.
That's not to say you can't give something in your will.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that.
I understand that, but if it's like, I'm going to give when I'm dead.
Yeah. All right, we got a little off track there. We're bringing it all back together as we talk about Dan and Sarah.
Okay.
Dan and Sarah. Dan and Sarah are barely getting by. They both work middle to low income jobs. Some months they make enough to save a little and even splurge on something nice, but other months they don't have enough to pay the bills. They rely on their credit cards and are getting deeper in debt with each bad month or unexpected expense. Dan believes they should try tithing and says if we give to God, he will bless us tenfold. Sarah would like to give also, but only in the good months, giving whatever extra money they have. What would you say to, let's start with Dan. What do you say to Dan? You like what he's thinking? You got anything, you advice you'd give him?
Come on, Dan.
Try it.
Try tithing.
Try it. Just see how it goes.
Try God.
Probably actually to both of them. Maybe you start planning yearly instead of month to month.
Okay. So more, you tell them to plan their finances more. Okay.
Or even outside of plan, just don't spend on like the month to month basis. Like they're viewing time monthly.
Mm-hmm.
They're viewing money monthly.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying, oh, we have enough to buy a really nice dinner this month, and next month they don't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a matter of like in depth planning. It's just saying, there are 2 months. They're actually 12, but there are 2 months. There's not just one.
The whole
month
string of them.
1 month that's bad. You
mm-hmm.
could have 2 normal months instead of a good month and a bad month.
Okay. So think bigger picture, because their income is variable.
I would say, kind of like with hospitality, you're not supposed to be hospitable in order that someone will like invite you back. Like Dan should not be trying to give so that
mm-hmm.
God like returns the favor.
Yeah.
Like it's generally a principle God often does like allocate more to those who are more generous, but that's not the goal. The goal is to like do it because you love and
mm-hmm.
honor God and you want to like worship Him.
So you'd kind of talk to Dan about his motivation. Like it would be good to tithe, but maybe different motivation.
And similar to Sarah, but in a different respect.
Yeah, what would you say to Sarah?
Also, only when it, it seems like it wouldn't be hard or wouldn't hurt, wouldn't be a struggle to give. And,
mm-hmm.
Them to read their Bibles because they don't seem to have a very good understanding of what the biblical idea of giving and stewardship is.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things. There's so many stories out there of just you're at a point where you are trying to decide, do we put gas in the car, do we give what we've figured out, allotted to give, and the Lord blesses it. You know, it's not like this formula,
yeah.
You know, that Dan's trying to put into practice, but there's just a reality of it, and it's, so I don't know, it's a trust thing, so you gotta help them understand faithfulness to the Lord, and God's faithfulness.
Yeah, I think that's good what you said, like, it's not a formula, so sometimes when a lot of what we talk about in here, it's not a lot of it is really the math behind it. So there is a sense in which, yeah, the practical issue is deciding how much they should give and how are we going to pay for things. But more importantly, what is their relationship with God like, and what's the motivation behind why they're going to choose to give? That's good. So what factors would help influence how they should decide to give to their church? If they're in this situation, it seems like they're really struggling to make enough every single month. What would you advise them?
I would say they should pull back and maybe do a study on what God's Word says about money and possessions. More broadly speaking, they're using credit cards and they're going deeper and deeper in debt.
Mm-hmm.
They're going in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
So if they give money and they're in debt, are they actually even giving their own money?
Mm-hmm.
And they borrowed?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think they need to pull back and say, wait, what does God's Word say about money and possessions as a whole first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. So they've got several issues that you can counsel them with, just financially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think having another set of eyes on the spending priorities, like we're not able to give to the church because we have a subscription to Hulu, Netflix, and Spotify.
Yeah.
So there might be some things that they think are priorities, and they think are needs that actually aren't.
I feel Dave Ramsey coming out, and how much is your car payment? You know, like, sell the car, you know, like, he's very, I think he called it scorched earth, you know, just burnt.
Rice and beans,
that's right, rice and beans.
Why are you working middle to low income jobs?
Yeah.
Because if it's all you can get, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Like, we need people to work those jobs, and those people deserve all the respect. But if you're working on middle to low income jobs because you don't want to work something harder, or something that takes longer hours, and you're specifically choosing a middle to low income job based on how easy it is, or on how simple it is, maybe you like just running the cashier at Bones. Like, that's great, but at some point you gotta try for something better.
Well, I will say...
Dexter takes offense to the
middle
man.
Dexter makes enough money that that's not an issue.
I will say something that's... struck me the last several years teaching at Emporia. So we did some time studying on just the way different people in different socioeconomic levels view money.
Yeah.
And like there is a mindset, a poverty mindset, there's a middle class mindset, there's a wealthy mindset where you just totally look at money and income and jobs and spending, it's totally different. And so sometimes there can be real difficulty conveying a view of money that's kind of like associated with your class view. If you've grown up in poverty versus you've grown up middle class and your goals and priorities are to strive to improve, that's kind of a middle class. We're just striving to improve, to grow, to work our way up. Where if your whole life has lived in poverty, it's about we enjoy what the Lord has provided for us today, and it's
it's great. God always provides for us, and when we have a lot, we're going to spend it, we're going to celebrate. When we don't, we're okay without it. We've learned to live in poverty. And so sometimes when you have those conversations, we almost have to step back and make sure that we're not just kind of bringing them into our worldview in a sense, where if I was in the, it's hard for me to identify, right, with the wealthy mindset, it's like, it's all about generational wealth, and okay, I've got to build my millions so that my next three generations down are not gonna. So there is a sense in which when you advise people and they're in a very different walk of life, maybe pause to think about their situation. Bring it ahead.
I also think there's a difference between being okay with living with poverty and living beyond your means.
Yeah, so for sure.
If you have extra money and you use that extra money and you're thankful for it when you have it, mm-hmm. that's great. And then the ones that you don't have all that extra money and you're living in poverty and you're okay with that, that's also okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that they're not content with that.
Mm-hmm.
That they aren't content with living in poverty. They're not actually living in poverty. They're failing to live in poverty because they're in debt.
Okay,
that,
we're getting there.
The
yeah, so debt's coming up. We've kind of been dancing around a little bit. What were you gonna say?
Yeah, and it's interesting, like when you look at the poverty mindset, middle class mindset, and wealthy mindset, what happens when you get a big fat tax return? Somebody with the poverty mindset would be partay,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is God's permission,
yeah.
to, you know, doing that, where I think middle class mindset is, well, we're going to save this for a rainy day.
Mm-hmm.
And the wealthy mindset is, what will I invest this in?
Yeah, I've got to put it to work, invest it.
Yeah.
So there's different ways.
There's just different ways, like what do you do with excess money?
Yeah, okay. So, and those are the kind of the two big questions. What do you do with excess and what do you do with lack, right? So
mm-hmm.
we're kind of getting towards those ideas. So let's wrap up. Let's look at, so there's some kind of bulleted further wisdom. So this is just from one person. It's not Dave. It's Jim Rickard from Stewardship Services Foundation. So here's a 14 points. Give God a chance first. So instead of buying it, ask God to provide it. So this kind of goes back to you never know how he might provide it. There might be different means other than just, I'm going to go buy this, right? Learning to save money, right? It's a learning thing. It's something you have to practice. Learn to spend less than you earn, right? And that's something that no matter how much, doesn't matter how much you are earning, learning to spend less than that. Don't finance pleasure items, right? So this goes to kind of thing we were talking about just a second ago, is what if they have higher and higher debt, what is that debt coming from? Is it on pleasure and convenience and leisure, or is it to pay for gas and food?
Yeah.
Have cash in an emergency fund, right? That's a very broad principle that unexpected things are going to come up, and having that money on hand kind of gives you a little bit of protection from having to borrow, from being completely wiped out. So number six, control, or some might say don't use, right? So credit cards is kind of an issue where it's like everyone has a little bit different opinions on how much and what is control and where do they have a place or not. Have adequate life insurance to protect your family. So we'll get into this more when we talk about retirement, but life insurance is one of several ways where you can be using your finances now and your earnings now to protect the people that you are providing for. So if you're a mother or a father and you have children, or if you're married and on one income, you have to realize that not only are you providing for people right now, but they depend upon you for a certain amount of time in the future. And so buying life insurance is a way of saying, I'm committed to providing for you now, working, earning, gaining income, paying the bills, but also I am going to try and provide for you if I were to die, right? I want to have insurance so that there's money there I can continue to provide for you in that sense. Self-insured. Right? Or have life insurance by 65 or retirement. Have a plan in progress by age 40 or earlier. I talk to all my high school kids about, you better start right now. No, I tell them like, I'll give you like 22, 23, I'll let you go through, but plan it, start it, and then you get to start.
Yeah.
One of my students this year said, I opened my investment account just after our class.
Oh yeah.
Good for you. Extra credit. Extra credit. Extra credit.
Make it a difference, Scott.
Big difference. I always tell them,
then come back and donate one of your first millions to the school. Let's see, where are we at? Have a workable budget, right? And so really that, whether it's budgeting beforehand or like looking back and monitoring it, you want to be able to have discipline and control over your spending. And understanding the difference between debt and an obligation. So also things like what's a liability, what is an asset, what's something that's just costing you money to own, or what is something you're investing in that's helping you grow your income. Taxes, understanding the tax law, right? So that can be either talking with a tax professional or, you know, doing your own research, but understanding what you owe with your taxes. And then having the plan, we talked about it briefly. What's your estate plan, what's your will, what's your trust? And so again, earlier I wasn't saying don't have a will, don't give through the will, it's just that there's no certainty. There's not as much certainty with the will as there is if you give it while you're alive. So when we pick up next time, special issues, we'll start out talking about retirement next time. So let me pray for us. Father, I thank you for our discussion today, and I thank you for the way that you have, and you continue to use money, you use these resources in our lives to teach us, to help us to become like you, to help make us generous, to help make us responsible, to help make us good stewards of and your representative here on this earth. I pray that you would help us to provide for all those under our care in a generous way and apply these principles of working hard, and continue to guide us in wisdom. Help us also to really engage in conversations that can bless one another in our marriages, to help us, for those who are not married, to really think through things as they are considering marriage and getting married, that they would talk through them with their spouse. And help us to grow, to be better stewards of what you've given us in your name. Amen. Mm-hmm.